So my last thing to do is introduce Andy Cooper from Yamaha, who's going to be giving tonight's talk. Andy is the Commercial Audio Support Services Manager, I believe, of Yamaha. So he looks after all the training issues and all of the support issues for the commercial side, commercial audio operations. And that means that all the training and all of the support comes through him, and that places him, I suppose, quite well to give tonight's lecture, which is Thoughts of an Audio Agnostic, Audio Networking Agnostic. Not badly remembered. So there are many people here I know from manufacturers, and I'm from a manufacturer as well, and probably some people from education establishments. So I think half of the audience is probably wondering which technology to adopt for their designs, and the other half is wondering which technology to buy. And I'm hoping we can get some answers tonight. So without any more ado, you've come here to see Andy. Let's hear Andy. Thank you.
Thanks. I'll get this microphone going. Probably you can hear me anyway, but it might help with the recording, which is being done tonight. Thanks everyone for coming. Nice to see a good bunch of you. I think I recognise some faces from the last tour I did for the AES back September last year in Guildford, where you studied.
Yes.
I remember giving a short tour there. You've got the 12-inch version today, or the extended remix, or the updates. Anyway, I'll be talking a bit longer. Similar subject to last time, but I'll go into some more detail, and hopefully there'll be more time for questions at the end. If you're wondering who I am, here's a brief kind of synopsis of what I've been up to. I've been involved in sound since studying it. Started studying in 1990, I guess, at university. Almost got to the Tom Master course, but I was ill and didn't get enough A-levels. Never mind. Anyway, I've worked for Yamaha for about 12 years, and I've been working with audio networks for about 10 years. So, gained a lot of experience. Some of the experience I'd rather not have had, but anyway, there you go. That's part of life. By the way, I guess everyone is English or is okay with understanding how the speed I'm talking today? Maybe I should say British, not just English. Okay, Scottish or Welsh people here. So I spend a lot of time training and talking to colleagues and customers in other parts of Europe, so normally I speak slow. So if I can speak faster this evening, then I'll get over it. Let's try. I'm going to try and get this laser pointer to work as well. There we go. Right. So here's the contents of what I'm going to talk about this evening. Brief introduction, and then we'll look at some of the major players in networking from the past and present and the future. So Cobranet, EtherSound, Opticore, Dante, Rocknet, and MediaNet, AVB, and others. And then we'll have a summary, some kind of conclusion, and then some kind of questions, maybe. Unless I already tell you everything you need to know, but I doubt it. So, why do we do networking? Why are we all here? Because we want to keep audio quality high. So, using digital networks, we can reduce loss of quality. And we want to have reliability, and we want to have stable systems. So with networking, we can easily add to existing systems, increase the size, modify them, just be more flexible. And we want to save money. So networking can reduce costs, particularly with cabling and installation costs. And we want to have an easy life. Probably. So we can save time and effort with installations due to the nature of cables that are used in networking. So that's my introduction, because I'm sure you know all the benefits already of audio networking. Now let's take a look at the main players. So Cobranet is probably where it all started. is where it all started for me, anyway, and for Yamaha. So Cobranets kind of began to be used somewhere around about 1997. I first started using it in 2002. So Cobranet is a licensed network protocol. That means as a manufacturer, you have to pay the owner of Cobranet to use Cobranet in your products. And so it quickly gained prominence because it was maybe the only solution for getting audio through Cat5 cables. And even now it is the most widely used network protocol, and the Cobranet guys themselves sort of advertise the fact that there's more than a million audio channels of Cobranet in existence in the world.
I don't dispute that.
So, what is so good about Cobranet? What is so attractive? Well, there's a huge range of devices available from all kinds of manufacturers. So it's not so difficult to find the kind of product that you need. It's fully 100 megabit Ethernet compatible, so you can use regular low-cost switches and cables and so on. You can build networks with more than 200 devices in it, no problem. And you've got redundancy. Almost every Cobranet device has a primary and a secondary port. If the cable to one fails, the other one takes over almost instantly. And it's popular in cruise ships, sports stadiums, and arenas, as an example. But what are the limitations? So, since Cobranet began, there have been a lot of other networks being designed and kind of advertising themselves as being better. Well, what's the problem with Cobranet? Many of you might know this already, but most Cobranet systems run with a latency of 5.33 milliseconds. So from input to output of the network, you wait 5.33 milliseconds, which means basically you can't use Cobranet for any kind of live performance system. Musicians will strongly complain. And you can never get more than 32 channels in and out of one device because of the size of the Cobranet module. And then, if you are designing a system, well, for each manufacturer of Cobranet products, you need a different piece of software to control that device. So there's no one software application which will be able to control and configure all Cobranet devices. So it's quite a headache for people who are installing systems. And then you've got the limitation of 100 megabit bandwidth because all Cobranet ports are 100 megabit. So you've got a maximum of 64 channels through one cable, which can be a limiting factor. And then you have to know about bundle numbers. So this is probably the most confusing part about Cobranet, and what puts people off the most is the bundle numbers. To transmit some channels, you have to bundle them in little groups of up to 8 channels, and then you have to give that group a number. It could be anything between the number 1 and 65,256 or something like that. I can't remember. Anyway, if you keep below 65,000, you'll be all right. So you have to kind of have a long spreadsheet list of channels, bundle numbers of the transmitter and receiver, and have a big kind of table of numbers to understand your network. So, what are the problems with Cobranet? Not that many people know how to design a system properly. That's my experience with helping people to sort out systems that were not designed properly in the first place. Because people don't understand the bandwidth limitations of 64 channels one way through a cable. And they don't understand the limitations of how many channels you can get in and out of a device, and whether you should choose multicast or unicast transmission. And then there's the whole bundle numbers thing as well. And the software tools, in my opinion, were never really fully developed. And Cirrus Logic, the owners of Cobranet, very slow to fix bugs. I'm sorry to say, I hope there's no one from
as soon as I meet you today. Otherwise, I might embarrass myself. But hey, they embarrass themselves.
So, one bug we found in one of our CobraNet products.
It was actually in the CobraNet module itself. Some part of the redundancy mechanism could cause the device to crash
and to freeze, and therefore stop audio. And it took Cirrus Logic more than 1 year to fix that bug.
That's very unacceptable. So, that's one bit of experience I'd like to get. So anyway, what is CobraNet good for? Because it is good for a number of things. You can have a low-cost network based on 100 megabits. You've got redundancy in your network for quite a low cost, and you can use CobraNet with regular networking redundancy mechanisms like link aggregation and spanning tree. I won't explain them now, but maybe some of you know about them. And it's good for transmitting a small number of channels to many destinations. And you can pick and choose from a wide range of products. So let me give you an example of a CobraNet installation. Cruise ships. So cruise ships from these companies all use CobraNet to transmit audio all through the vessel from all different entertainment areas in the ship. Even that one. Costa Concordia. I spent 2 days on that ship. About a year or two before it crashed to help with the system. So, a typical CobraNet installation on a cruise ship, what does it look like? Well, it's used for transmitting background music and announcements to multiple locations. It links larger venues with small venues. You know, most ships like this, they'll have a 500-seat theatre in the front end, and then they'll have like jazz bars, piano, bars, a little nightclub and youth venue, all those kind of entertainment areas that get linked with CobraNet. And it's important to have redundancy because you could be away from port or away from anywhere where you can fix stuff for some time. So if you have redundancy, then you can go for longer periods in between your maintenance, and you can keep the weight of cables down as well. And you have long distances to cover. You know, these ships are like 400 meters long or something like that, and you can have 15 or 18 floors. So they are huge beasts. So here's a quick kind of system, simplified system diagram. You've got a mixing desk, a music bar, and a network switch. Mixing desk in a theater and a network switch. Kind of broadcast location where announcements are made and there's background music players and so on. And then smaller venues, nightclubs and shops, and then there's switches, and then you get your redundant switches as well, and you connect it all in a ring, normally a fiber optic ring. And with this redundancy, if any cable fails, no problem, audio continues. If any switch fails, no problem, audio continues. So you have quite a resilient system. So that's a brief example. Now my question is, CobraNet, is it still relevant or is it out of date now? Perhaps not. So Dante, I'll explain, is becoming a lot more popular and is taking over the jobs that CobraNet once did. And those clever Dante people, they designed a module which can easily replace a CobraNet module in a device. It's sort of the same size and shape with the same connection. And a number of companies, including my own and PB, for their media matrix, have introduced Dante options. Dante is lower cost as well. This is quite a key thing too. So these ones here, a CobraNet one, let me think of the price. Maybe let's say it's something like £800 for a CobraNet card. The equivalent Dante one maybe is £500. So it's quite a good cost saving. But CobraNet is still well known by a lot of system designers. and even some Kubernetes products are still being launched. Even just last month in Infocom USA, Kubernetes products were launched because it's recognized as an important system. So Kubernetes will be with us for a few more years yet. And just to show that, here's some venues where it was recently used. So Westminster Abbey, just down the road, has a Kubernetes system. I installed a bit over a year ago, maybe 2 years ago. Castle in Warsaw, and a lovely holiday resort in Greece, which I have not been to, but I would like to go. So yeah, this is another thing I put in here. You know, it's we are at the mercy of third parties whenever we choose a network. So Hewlett-Packard have a bunch of switches in there used for Kubernetes. And again, it was like the redundancy switching part of it. We found a bug in the Hewlett-Packard switch. Thankfully, that only took maybe a month or two to fix it, which is much better than Cirrus Logic. But anyway, thanks to their sort of cooperation. But you know, you never know when you come across these hurdles. Thankfully, we had a big important project, and to kind of get them to get them some incentive to sort it out. Anyway, that's a brief aside. So, Kubernetes still alive and well after all these years. Now let's have a look at Ethersound. That's the next one that came along. And there's an Ethersound card there on the front desk. So this has now been with us for 10 years or more. So let's take a quick look at this. Again, it's a licensed network protocol, so the manufacturer has to pay some money to use any Ethernet module in their product. It's owned by Digigram, and there are over 30 manufacturers licensed to use Ethersound, and it is a popular choice for live sound applications. There's a link StageBox to a mixing desk, for example, and to link mixing desk to a speaker processor. And there is a reason for it being a popular choice for that. Mainly because of the very low latency involved. So if you remember, Kubernetes typically has 5.3 milliseconds of latency, though small Kubernetes networks can have lower latency. But here, we're talking 0.125 milliseconds of latency as the minimum. And even when you add more devices, you are always staying within 0.2 milliseconds of latency, basically. So this makes it suitable for live sound applications where you've got musicians needing to hear themselves in real time. Another good thing about Ethersound is you don't need switches. You can just daisy chain the devices. And this is a key point. It's easy to set up for non-network specialists. You know, for people who come from an audio background, they're just used to connecting one device to another device. And they can still do that with Ethersound. And another key point is you only need one software application to control all your Ethersound devices. And that makes it a lot simpler to maintain your network. And there's been continuous development and improvements over the last few years, though that does seem to have slowed down. But recently, 1 gigabit modules were introduced, capable of 256 channels. So previously, we just had 64-channel devices. Now we can have 256-channel devices. So that's one nice improvement. Though, obviously, the license fee goes up. So what are the limitations of Ethersound? Why is this not the perfect solution? Well, in most cases, you're limited to 64 channels each way. You know, that's as many audio channels as a 100 megabit network can manage. If you do the maths, 64 channels times 24 bits, and then you realize that is using up 95 megabits per second or something like that. So then you've got a little bit of space for control data. So another limitation with Ethersound is latency is not completely consistent. It always remains very low, and you can always calculate it.
So for example, if you have more than 7 or 8 devices in your data chain, then your last device will have a sample extra latency than your first device. Just for example. So can be a bit tricky. It can mean that the left side of your PA system could have one sample extra delay than the right side of your PA system, for example, and then you get comb filtering, which is not really what you want. So you have to design your system carefully. Another thing, redundancy is only possible if you restrict your network 64 channels totally. So you can make a redundant ring with either sound, but then you're really limited in your size. And then there's a cost limitation. So if Kubernetes is £800 and if Dante is £500, either sound is like £1,000 or more. As an example. So anyway, now let's look at a good thing about EtherSound. What makes EtherSound so useful? Well, you've got a very low latency. So for musicians playing on stage, it's good for them. You've got networking without needing any IT equipment. So simple kind of plug and play system. And you can make systems with a few devices transmitting a fair number of channels. So for a small PA system, mixing desk with 48 channels in and 24 channels out, and stage boxes, you can make the sound system quite nicely and never have to worry about the latency. So let's have a case study for EtherSound. How does a typical EtherSound system look? So we'll look at Congress Palace in Lugano in Switzerland. And let's see what they've done here. So they've got 48 channels of EtherSound from their stage box to their two mixing desks, front of house and monitors. And then 8 channels from the front of house mixing desk to their matrix processor, and then from their matrix processor to their amplifiers. So you can get amplifiers with EtherSound inputs. So you keep everything digital from your stage box to your amps, which is really nice. And almost, in this system, almost no recognizable IT equipment. They just have one switch there. So they daisy chain everything. And then here, this switch actually splits the signal to all their amplifiers. So it means you get kind of the same latency to every amplifier because it's the same signal path to every amplifier. And that's quite a nice way to distribute things. But you notice there's no redundancy as a comparison to Kubernetes. So it would be quite rare to find an EtherSound system in a cruise ship because of that. So EtherSound has been with us for 10 years. Is it going to be with us for another 10 years? In my view, it seems like Digigram, the owners of EtherSound, have sort of lost interest and moved on to other things. Because the take-up of the 1 gigabit EtherSound stuff, which can do 256 channels, was minimal. So maybe it was too expensive, I don't actually know. Or maybe customers and manufacturers were getting bored of the topology restrictions and the hassles of designing systems. I'm not too sure. Or maybe it's because Dante came along, which was lower cost. A variety of reasons. Anyway, it seems like it's getting towards the end of the road for EtherSound's development. But what they already have is still pretty good. So yeah, for small and medium systems, it is the simplest way to do audio networking. And it's recently been used in a lot of interesting venues. So there's a bunch of nightclubs around the UK using EtherSound. A live music venue in Madrid was recently completed, and then the Stade de France in Paris has a huge EtherSound network with loads of 42 Nexo amps and speaker processors, for example, and a big fiber optic ring going around the stadium. So
Let's move on. OptiCore is the next audio network that I came across. I'm doing this in kind of chronological order to the way I discovered and worked with these networks, just in case you're wondering. So OptiCore, this was first used in the year 2000, but I didn't come across it until about 2003 or 2004. So this is the first proprietary network type that we're looking at. That means, as a manufacturer, you can't use it unless you are OptiCore. So, for an OptiCore network, you have to use OptiCore devices. It's proprietary to the OptiCore company. So, OptiCore uses fiber optics and is not compatible with Ethernet. So, this is the first system that is not compatible with Ethernet that we're looking at. But it can carry Ethernet data through its own network. And that's quite a nice, interesting thing. So let's take a look at a few details about OptiCore. What makes it so good? Up until last year, all OptiCore devices worked on a 1 gigabit fiber network. But now they've upgraded it to 2 gigabits. So you can carry over 1,000 audio channels through your fiber ring, which is a lot of channels and makes it very, very useful. And look, the latency is incredibly low, 41.6 microseconds. That's awesome. And you've got redundancy because you've got a double ring. Every device has 2 fiber ports, so you can make a double ring. One ring gets cut, the other ring continues. If the other ring gets cut, well, you've sort of got a daisy chain and it still works. So you have a bunch of interfaces for OptiCore. They make a lot of analog ones, some with mic preamps, and then they make interfaces with MADI, AES, EBU, Ethernet, serial data. So you can connect their devices to many other audio devices. So the limitations, there's not that many limitations unless you are sensitive about the price and possibly about the number of devices in your network. So you can have, there's a limit of 24 devices in your ring. So if you've got more than 24 points where you need network in and out, then you have to think about something else. But in many cases, 24 points is enough. And of course, products are only available from one source, OptiCore distribution channel. And then a cost per network audio channel, I guess, is relatively high if you have a small system. If you need 1,000 channels, then it's great value. If you only need 50 or 60 channels, then it's rather expensive. Unless you go for their new Cat5 only solution, which they call SANE. Which I think is also limited to 64 channels. But yeah, that's a lower cost, small solution system. So OptiCore is good for large networks that carry many audio channels over long distances because we've got fiber. And where redundancy is crucial, you've got your double ring. So really you've got double redundancy. And if you need to carry Ethernet data with the audio signals, then you can do that. So you can have a sort of 100 megabit Ethernet network living inside your audio network. And that's a cool thing. If you've got a computer in one place and you've got speaker processors and amplifiers in other places that you need to monitor through Ethernet, then you can use the same ring for that. So that's a nice touch. So let's have a look at a case study. It's been used at Athens Olympics 2004. I was there for that one. Beijing Olympics. And it will be used next month in the London Stadium as well. So OptiCore at a large stadium. So let's say a large temporary installation. You can carry many channels a long distance. You've got your mic preamps in different locations around the stadium. You've got your mixing desks in a fixed location. Some mixers for front of house, mixing making the sound for the audience, another mixer making the sound for the performers in the opening and closing ceremony, and then you've got your broadcast mixers as well, in the basement or outside the stadium. And they all need to be connected. And then you've got the amplifiers like around the roof as well, all around the floor, putting your speakers up at the audience. So you've got a lot of places to connect. So a system will typically look like this. Mic preamps, analog inputs and outputs, then your mixing desks, either with optical cards inside them or with maybe MADI or ASCBU interfaces. So you've got one ring linking your inputs to your mixers, and then you have another ring linking your speaker processors to all your amplifier locations. And here you'd probably have optical to ASCBU outputs, and you'd use amplifiers with ASCBU inputs to keep it digital to the amps. That's typically what you do. So you have two rings, both with redundancy, and then you've got this link here, and you will have redundancy here as well. You'll have two link devices, per se. You'll have two mixers for each location as well. You'll have redundancy for everything. And there will not be one single point of failure in the system. That's the plan. And that's where optical is good at providing redundant systems. So it's recently used in these venues. Swedish Theatre in Helsinki, Grammy Awards a few months ago in USA, and the Brussels Opera House uses a little optical system as well. Let's look at Dante next. Just take a quick drink.
How are we doing so far? Is it all? Well, okay. You storing up your questions for later, or am I answering them all?
It's okay.
It's up to you, I think.
Okay. Is everyone happy to save questions until later? Is that good?
Or are there any burning ones for people who need to leave?
Stick your hand up if you have a sort of important question which you need answering quickly. Okay. So, Dante. Dante is again a licensed network protocol like EtherSound and Cobranet. The manufacturer pays to use it, and it is Ethernet compliant, so we can put Dante through regular IT switches and fiber converters and so on. Yamaha's been using it for about 2 years, and it seems to be rapidly gaining popularity as well. Sort of almost every month there seems to be another manufacturer announcing, yeah, we're making a Dante product. Which is kind of exciting and interesting. We'll see where it takes us. But also it's going to be compatible with future AVB standards. And I'll talk a little bit about this later as well. So AVB, Audio Video Bridge, which is an emerging network standard. And with Dante, it's still fairly young, and there is continuous development on new modules and software features. So for example, how many channels you can get in and out. This device is a 16 channel in and out. There's also a 64 channel in and out module, and 128 channel one is coming, and I believe they'll be making some very low channel count devices as well, which will be a lot lower cost. So there's continuous development going on. So the good bits about Dante is lower cost than their competitors. That's a good thing to begin with. And it's scalable to larger networks. So Cobranet and EtherSound limited to 100 megabits. Dante now we can go gigabit and even up to 10 gigabit. So using regular Ethernet switches and so on, we can build larger networks with more channels. So 1 gigabit, that means something like 512 channels each direction through a gigabit cable. And the good thing about Dante is we can integrate it with existing office networks. So it has mechanisms in it to allow it to travel through regular office networks without clogging up your system, which Ethersound will do and Cobra-X can do if you're not careful. So if you ever plug Ethersound, if you ever plug an Ethersound device into your office network, then everything will probably freeze up instantly. If you plug in CobraNet, then wait and see how long it takes your IT guys to sort of come and say, hey, what's happening? There's a lot of multicast traffic. If you plug Dante in, well, it sort of depends how, well, it will test the robustness of your network, let's say, and it could obviously it could create a lot of traffic if you've got a lot of channels, but there are methods to allow Dante traffic to coexist with all your regular office traffic with no problem at all. But that was only another 2 hours to explain, so I'll skim over that, if you don't mind. Okay, there's an easy computer recording interface for Dante as well. They have a virtual sound card. You can plug the Dante network into your computer and record 64 channels through your network interface, which is a really key point. And then you've got sample accurate sync with all your devices in the network. CobraNet can't do that. Ethersound can't do that. Dante can. Every device in the network is synchronized. And a typical network will have a latency of lower than 1 millisecond, which is the target, really, for systems for use in live sound, where you have real-time musicians wanting to hear their sound. And you can build large networks easily. You can have more than 200 devices and more than 500 channels in any Dante network. And most Dante devices have redundancy. Like CobraNet, you have a primary and a secondary connector on most Dante devices. So, that's the good bits, but hey, it's a network. There are some limitations. The control software is lacking some features that we consider to be important, like being able to tunnel serial data from one device to another. So this card here has got a serial port on it. Can't use it yet. We have to wait for the software to sort of be able to tell us so that we can say, right, I want serial data from that card to go to whatever other card on the network. And then we can do with things like password protection and offline editing and so on. So it's still developing. It's not ideal, not perfect yet. Or you could say that Ethersound software is more advanced at the moment. And at the moment there is a limited range of devices available so far, but keep your eye on the press, and every month or so there's a new Dante device being launched. So Dante is on the rise. So what is it most useful for? If you want to put audio on an existing office network, then you can with Dante. So Dante uses voice over IP style quality of service, which means you can put it on the same network as other stuff. You don't need to create a separate VLAN for Dante. And then if you need a network with low latency and highly accurate sync, which probably most live sound installations or touring systems will want, then Dante is a good choice. And if you're designing and building a temporary network in a short space of time, then Dante could be a good choice. So festivals and exhibitions, that sort of thing. You know, I sort of call these things temporary installations, if you like. So a case study is exactly one of those temporary installations. The Winter Olympics in Canada a couple of years ago. So this was a large Dante network, but quite simple in that it didn't have many types of device in it. So it had more than 100 Dante devices all connected, but almost all of them were lab-driven amplifiers with LAB processors and Dante connectors in them. And they had a 1 gig fiber optic network, and they, of course, with it being Olympics, they had full redundancy. So, kind of system, at the front of house mixing position, they'd take a couple of channels, like from the mixing desk or some processor, put them in to the Dante network, and then transmit them to all the different areas of the PA system. And then there'd be a redundant network as well. So with Dante using just normal Ethernet networks, you can build a kind of star topology, or it's got a sort of free choice of the topology of the network. And again, full redundancy. So if any cable breaks, no loss of audio. If any switch fails, no loss of audio. And actually the redundancy of Dante works faster than the redundancy of Cobernet, for example. Cobernet, you might have, maybe, if you're using a spanning tree network, you'd have a couple of seconds of silence, maybe sometimes. Or if not, then you'd certainly hear the switchover. It'd be quick, but you'd hear it. But it'd be quick enough to satisfy most of the audience. They won't be running for the exits. But with Dante, you don't even hear the switchover. To know there's been a switchover because of the problem, you have to keep your eye on the control software, which will flag up a warning for you. So, Dante has recently been used in these events. European Cup in Poland. Every stadium in Poland had a Dante system. And a very interesting thing is Dante was transmitted through another network, which I'll briefly talk about later. And then another exhibition in Germany, and another nice sort of holiday destination. It looks a bit busy and noisy for my type of holiday, really. So again, a range of installations and uses for Dante recently. So what next? Riedel Rognet. How am I doing for time? I think I don't need to rush quite yet. So Riedel Rognet is probably not so familiar to us who live in the UK. It's a fair bit more popular in Germany or German speaking areas. And also in Scandinavia, it seems. So, Rognet is like OptiCore, it's a proprietary network. So, you can't buy Rognet stuff to put in your own device if you are a manufacturer. You have to buy stuff from Riedel if you want to use Rognet. But it's been around since 2006. And it has some good points to it. So it's Cat5 based, but you can have 160 audio channels. So it trumps Cobernet and Ethersound. And you can have a long distance in your cable as well, which is a key point. You know, normal Ethernet, you're limited to 100 meters maximum. Rognet, so you can do 150, which can be important because probably, let's say, between 2-5% of live sound jobs, your distance from front of house to stage, because you can't just put a cable straight through the audience, you have to go round and about and maybe through the basement or over doors. Between 2-5% of venues, your cable length is going to be more than 100 meters. So that would mean you have to use fiber, but for Rognet, you don't have to use fiber, so it can keep the cost down. Like Ethersound, you have a simple ring topology, and you can have up to 99 devices in that ring, and you still have less than 1 millisecond latency. So, even including analog in, analog out, which is pretty impressive, because many other audio devices will have more than 1 millisecond latency just for that AD conversion. So they really care about live sound. You don't need to know anything about Ethernet or networking. You just plug your things in. You don't need a computer to set it up. It's really easy to use. It's been designed for kind of old school analog sound engineers to get a hang of. And they make interfaces for a variety of mix and console manufacturers, including Yamaha and Soundcraft and Studer. So, there's some good bits about RockNets, but there are some limitations, as there always are, unfortunately. They only make kind of small devices, let's say, for analog audio, just 1U 8-channel devices. They do make some devices with more channels for digital, so you've got a MADI or ASCBU interface. Then you have to patch channels in four, in groups of four channels. And it's not compatible with Ethernet switches and fiber converters. So if you want to use fiber, you have to buy a special RockNet fiber converter. So it means it's a little bit higher cost to go fiber than with Ethernet-based networks. You do have a small bit of bandwidth available in RockNet to carry control data, but it's just 10 megabits per second. It's enough for a lot of control stuff, but you know, not enough for some other applications. So RockNet is particularly good for small and medium-sized live sound systems, and it does link with Riedel's MediaNet, which is a vast kind of multi-audio-video kind of network. I'll have a little bit of information about that later. And RockNet sort of analog input devices have a clever independent gain function. So if you've got two mixing desks sharing one device, then if one mixer adjusts the input gain, it doesn't affect the level on the other mixing desk. So the two sound engineers don't start a fight over the input levels. So that's quite a nice kind of aside. You know, like I said, I do really think about live sound applications. So a case study for RockNet is here in front of us, Eurovision Song Contest last year. So RockNet was used to carry audio all over the place, from stage boxes to monitor consoles and to front of house consoles and to rehearsal room and to broadcast area. And also, MediaNet was used to carry a lot of the camera signals and the comms and the radio commentary and so on. It was a huge, huge network. I think they employed, Riedel employed a team of like 25 or 30 technicians just to take care of the network for the duration of the event. So the audio part, RockNet, it was going to live inside MediaNet for the event. That was the plan, but actually at the time they couldn't get it working, so they quickly separated RockNet from MediaNet and kept RockNet as a totally separate network. So and thankfully at these kind of events you have a lot of time to build up your system and check it and troubleshoot. So thankfully they had enough time and they had a sort of backup plan, if you like, to get everything going. So the system looked, the system was so large, I have to kind of show a simplified version on two slides. So this is the sort of first part of the system, radio mics with ASEBU outputs going to your RockNet device, and that transmits RockNet to all the mixing desk areas. You've got monitor desks, you've got front of house desks, and you've got broadcast desks. So three mixers sharing one set of inputs, all connected in a ring. But you need redundancy. So what happened for redundancy is you take the analog outputs and take them to regular analog splits, and you split the analog signal three ways. One way goes straight to the monitor desks because they're close to the radio mics, and then it also splits to analog to RockNet converters to carry to the other locations. So you have there redundant sort of rod rings for one ring to carry the analog inputs to the broadcast mixer and one ring to carry analog inputs to the front of house mixers. Okay. So that's the front part of the system. Then the end part of it has another bunch of rings. So we have, so to your front of house mixers, you have your analog backup and you have your digital inputs. So you've got two sets of inputs coming in, digital from RockNet and then analog. And then you go digital from the mixers to these redundancy switching units. So you switch from the main one to the backup one in case of emergency, and then you've got AES connections from your redundancy switches, and of course you have two switches, so you've got a redundant redundancy switcher, and then you get your speaker processors, and you get analog out, and you get digital out of them, so you've got redundant networks, one RockNet network basically carrying your analog converted signals, and the other RockNet network carrying your digital signals to your amplifiers, and of course each amplifier has a digital in and an analog in, and then you switch between them in case of any problem. There is your big, complicated, redundant network. So, this event taught us a few lessons about network design and planning and supporting. So, with MediaNet, you can integrate audio, lighting, communications, control, all into one big network. And that sounds like a great, fantastic idea, until something goes wrong. It makes it more difficult to troubleshoot, because there's no one person that knows the whole system. We found, you know, there are network specialists who know all the network, but they know nothing about the devices that are putting signals into the network and taking signals out. So it's actually quite complicated to troubleshoot. And maybe that's one reason why we pulled audio out of that network, so we can have more control and understanding of it. So for large temporary events, therefore we learned from this to sort of, it could be a good idea to keep audio in a separate network, so you can sort of support it and troubleshoot it quicker, because for large temporary events you don't always have a lot of time to investigate the problems that you may come across. And for similar reasons, you might want to keep the network kind of away from the mixing desk. So, you know, if you have a RockNet or a optical card in your mixing desk, then maybe if a network specialist sort of wants to reboot your desk, to, you know, reboot the card, you have to reboot the whole desk. Or, you know, the console specialist doesn't really know anything about the card that's living inside his mixer, and the network specialist doesn't really know anything about the host for his card. So they have some kind of difficulty with troubleshooting. So if instead of using a card, you use a device which converts your network to MADI or AES EBU or some other shared protocol like that, then you've got a separate network and you've got a separate mixing system and everybody understands everything. You know, there's nothing complicated about little copper BNC cables to carry MADI from one device to another. Well, there can be, but there isn't normally. So there sort of could be some lessons learned about that. You know, sure, you could integrate everything if you're confident that you've got the time and the energy to do your full troubleshooting for that. So permanent installations could be a good idea. So now let's look at MediaNet, because it is a really good, exciting, clever thing. As far as I know, there is sort of nothing like it at the moment. And it is becoming popular with large-scale broadcast events like Formula One and like the Euro 2012 football championships. So with MediaNet, it's a huge, like, carries 20 gigabits of data through fibre, and it carries, audio is just a small part of it. It carries a lot of video, a lot of control, data and so on. So RockNet can tunnel through MediaNet, and it can also carry 1 gigabit Ethernet data, which is very interesting.
So through that Ethernet system, you could tunnel your CobraNet or your EtherSound or your Dante, and that's what we did at Euro 2012. We put Dante through MediaNet.
And, well, actually, in Poland we did that. In the Ukraine, there weren't enough Dante devices available for all the stadiums, so in the Ukraine, RockNet was used, actually. Both can be tunneled through there. So it's a really neat system, but you pay for it. So the lowest cost node is something like £15,000, I think. So it's quite a high entry cost, compared to anything, let's say. But when you think about the cost per gigabit, it's good value. So if you need that full 20 gigabits, it's great value for money.
It really is.
So, I'm doing a lot of talking.
So, I hope I'm not getting you all too tired.
We are reaching the latter stages of the presentation. But maybe the part that will bring the most questions. We'll see. So, other audio networks. There's quite a lot, isn't there? There's maybe, well, let's be honest, there's more than we want. So, Avion makes a network, and this rose to prominence in the early 2000s because of its neat musician monitoring system. You'd have a Cat5 kind of data chain network to carry 16 audio channels to a little headphone mixer so musicians could use that in a studio or on a stage. Go to West End musicals. Almost all West End musicals will use the Avion system to provide their in-ear or little wedge monitoring. So it became popular for that. But then Avion developed a 64-channel network, similar concept to RockNet. Channels are grouped in bundles of four, and again, it's a proprietary, so Avion is the only guys that make Avion network devices. You use them in a data chain, or you buy a special hub which will split the signal for you. So it's more popular in USA, where it is developed, and you see it a lot in churches and art centres and education. So it's quite rare to find in Europe. AES50, on the other hand, you're more likely to find it in Europe than other parts, because mostly it's used by English manufacturers, by the same Clark Technic. So AES50, known as SuperMac, 100 megabits over Ethernet, it's kind of a point-to-point technology. But again, you can get specialist routers so you can create star networks to transmit it wide around. And it has this kind of neighboring protocol called HyperMac, which can transmit more channels and can also carry some IP data. But I believe it's a licensed protocol, so you can license it from the owners. I think Myers Clark Technic are the owners of it. Correct me if I'm wrong.
So the music group.
So Behringer or the music group are owners of these guys now, so maybe they are the owners of AES50. So you can license it to use it, I believe, but currently, let's say the only licensees are the owners, as far as I know. But it does have very, very low latency and can work nicely at 96 kHz.
By the way, all these other networks can work at 96 kHz, but you half the number of channels you can carry easily.
REAC. This is from Roland, and again, it's proprietary. Only Roland devices are using REAC at the moment. It's based on 100 megabit Ethernet using Cat5 cable. You can use Ethernet switches for splitting the audio, but you need a dedicated device for merging audio from two devices. It'll carry 40 audio channels at 96 kHz, and it can also carry some MIDI data. Again, nicely low latency. So yeah, quite a neat solution for if 40 audio channels is enough, then it's quite a neat system. Now, Nexus StageTech is commonly seen in theatres and TV stations around Europe. It's kind of a network, but it's really sort of, it's based on proprietary peer-to-peer connections, but it has such an enormous router in the middle of it, 4,096 channels in and out, that you can make some kind of huge network by having loads and loads of peer-to-peer connections using fiber. So one central device with a huge matrix, and then up to 16 remote devices with 256 in and out each. You can create massive systems. But it's not really a network, but it has a huge advantage because it's got a bigger matrix than all the other networks we've seen so far. So it's quite a relevant thing. But again, if you want to use it, you have to get the stuff from StageTech, so it's proprietary. Now, Ravina is an interesting thing. I'm sure you've read about it and heard about it, and it's kind of confusing and kind of annoying for someone like me. And I'll tell you why it's annoying, because it's so similar in concept to Dante that you kind of wonder, what's the point of making another network which is like the same as another that already exists? As far as I can tell, the only difference is that actually Ravina is license free. So, as a manufacturer, you can use it and not have to pay a license to use it. Okay, that's a key point. With Dante, you have to pay a license to use it. So, partners are increasing in number. It primarily seems to be focused on the broadcast industry side of things, but we've not seen any kind of amazing game changer products yet. Any products that really sort of change the way you do stuff. So it's worth keeping an eye on, but sort of at the same time, secretly, a lot of people in the live industry side of things hope it sort of doesn't go anywhere. I'm not allowed to say that sort of thing here. Just have done. Whoops. Anyway, but if it does become popular, then okay, then we should start taking a look at it, of course. So what about AVB? Is it the future network? Is it the holy grail of networking? So AVB, audio video bridge. I imagine most of you have heard of this. That'd be fair to say, give me a nod. Yeah, shows you're all awake as well. So, AVB uses IEEE standardized transport protocol for audio and video over Ethernet. The Avenue Alliance has existed to promote interoperability between a variety of manufacturers. And maybe that's the most exciting point, maybe. We have this audio-video bridge, which is kind of unlicensed, free-to-use technology, and then there's a whole bunch of manufacturers talking to try and make sure all their products will be able to communicate with each other and work in an integrated system. So that's maybe why people are interested in this and want to see how it's going to develop further. So the benefits of AVB, let's take a look at that. One, you get synchronization to a common time base, which is actually similar to what Dante is doing now, how you get every device in the system to be synchronized together. Then you get guaranteed bandwidth for your important data, which is your audio. Yes. Apart from audio, what else matters? Look.
Sorry.
Good one. Yeah, that's the synchronization. Thanks, yeah. Yeah, clock helps to create good audio. So you get guaranteed bandwidth. So other data doesn't crowd out your audio data, which can happen with other network protocols. And then you get a priority system. So clock has the highest priority, you get in to the destination on time, then audio, second level of priority, and then control data, just whenever you've got some free space. So that's the main benefits of AVV. How does it compare to existing solutions? Let's see. Well, off-the-shelf AVV compatible switches will be easier to use and set up than standard switches that we want to use for Dante or Cobalt and so on. You know, you need a little bit of IT skill or knowledge to set up a switch to use with a Dante or a Cobalt network if it's a reasonably large, complex network with a lot of audio channels. Then you need to do some switch configuration, let's say, to really make your network reliable and stable. If you have a very small, simple network, you don't need to do any switch configuring, but sometimes you do need to do some. So AVB will make it simpler to create more complex networks. But they are going to be more expensive and less readily available, at least to begin with. And if AVB really takes off in the wider AV industry, if every home in the land sort of starts to need an AVB switch to connect to the TV, to the internet, to the digital radio, to the media storage system, to the microwave oven or something, then you know, it could become way lower cost. But regular Ethernet switches will not be compatible with AVB. So you can't put AVB stuff onto existing networks. So that's one limitation. Then, actually there are many other networks out there which offer or promise lower latency than AVB currently promises. Now, it's still a bit hazy, but the best quote I have been able to find about AVB, and even talking to colleagues of mine who are on the Avenue Alliance kind of team, it's still a bit hazy about latency, but we see a promise of 2 milliseconds over 7 switch hops at 100 megabits. Well, most networks will have less switch hops than that, and most networks will work at 1 gigabit probably, which should be faster, so we should get a lower latency. But as of yet, we have no promise. So we wait and see with bated breath. And anyway, existing Dante products will be compatible with AVB after a firmware upgrade. We're promised. Now these sort of Dante cards here will be compatible with AVB just by changing their firmware. Their hardware is ready to go. So think any Dante product is ready to be compatible with AVB in the future. So that is a very interesting thing, and that's a very attractive thing about using Dante now. And then there's no license fee, as I said, to use AVB. So future products could be lower cost. But it all depends on how difficult they are to develop and support, which we are not sure of yet. So we wait and see. So what about AVB right now? What position are we at? How long do we have to wait before we can really start using it if we want to? Well, there's switches available. BSS make a switch. But at the same time, BSS have announced the release of Dante devices. So maybe they recognise, maybe ABB is taking a bit longer than we realised. Let's do Dante. They've got networks ready now, and they can be upgraded to be compatible with ABB in the future. Avid have an ABB-enabled stage box for their mixing system. Maya Sound use ABB in their Dimitri system. And at Infocom last month, there was a big display of ABB devices working together from a whole range of manufacturers. So the Avenue Alliance, the kind of ABB group of people, are starting to certify products early in 2030. So by this time next year, the first ABB product should be available and ready. I have no idea what they're going to be, exactly. But anyway, all these devices that are already out there will become certified, I guess, to be to have the Avenue Alliance certificate, which means you should be able to connect all of these together and share audio. Now, there's nothing about sharing control in Avenue Alliance, as far as I know. It's all about sharing the audio. Because there's nothing to stop a manufacturer from making an ABB product that will not talk to other ABB products. Yeah, to keep ABB within their own circle. There's nothing to stop that. You could easily do that. You know, one manufacturer could make a bunch of ABB products with the intention of never connecting to any other company's ABB products. So the Avenue Alliance will certify that your device will talk to the devices from the other members of the Avenue Alliance. So, talking about control, what is OCA? Maybe some of you have heard of OCA. I don't know. Well, you have now. Okay, I hope I don't have any difficult questions. If you do, send them by Carrier Vision or email. So, open control architecture. This is not a media transport protocol, but it's a complement to it. So you could consider it maybe as a complement to ABB or to Dante or some other shared network protocol. So this is a communication protocol. I'm just bringing it up very briefly, so it can be used alongside ABB or Dante, and it means one device, one manufacturer's device could control another manufacturer's device or share information, let's say. Maybe share information about audio levels or EQ curve or compressor values or something. Oops, moved on too quick. So there's a bunch of groups working together forming this control specification to share. So that's an aside. So with Dante, you can send control data through the same port as the audio data. No problem, there's a lot of devices that do that. Share one network port for control and audio. So the same would be for ABB as well. If you're sharing audio, hey, let's try and share some control information as well. It makes perfect sense. So we've talked a lot about networks. We've seen all the main players. They all have advantages, they all have disadvantages. Well, what's to stop you from using the advantages of one alongside the advantages of another in one system? Often people just don't consider it, but you can make some really, really groovy systems by using more than one network protocol in an installation. So let me just present a few possibilities and suggestions to you. You know, you could use EtherSound to go from the stage box to your main front of house mixing desk, and then you could go Dante from your mixing desk to your amplifiers. So, from stage box to mixer, EtherSound, you've got the ultra low latency, and then with Dante, you've got your sample accurate synchronization from one transmitter to all your amplifier receivers. well, why not embed one protocol within another? So we've already seen, we can put Dante through a MediaNet system, or you could put CobraNet through an optical system or something, because both optical and MediaNet have Ethernet compatible tunnels through them. So here are some real world examples of multi-network systems that are out there. So Westfield Shopping Centre in Stratford, that's brand new, and that has Ethersound and it has Dante in its audio system working nicely together. And then I already mentioned the European Football Championships. We've got Dante within MediaNet working very nicely together. So there are those possibilities, and don't forget about them. So, brings us to another point. There's money to be made in network bridges, and some companies do make some interesting network bridges, or they are, let's say, going to make them. So here's a few examples. You can easily convert one protocol to another with Windows device, should you want to or should you need to. You know, there's a lot of network protocols out there. Hey, we have to live with it. No, we can't just kill them all off except for one. Instantly, that's just not practical. We have to learn how to live with them and how to utilize the best parts of each one. So therefore, we need these converters. Right, summary and conclusions. That's not me. I was not involved. That's just some random picture off the internet. So, compare and review the main protocols that we've talked about. So, here we go. So, there's two types, license or proprietary, or license-free. Then, is it Ethernet compatible? Can we use regular off-the-shelf Ethernet switches and stuff with it? Yes or no, or partly.
Really?
Why partly? Partly, you can use a regular switch to split your signal to multiple locations, but you can't use a switch to merge from multiple locations to one. You can't do that, it'll overload your network. So that's what partly means. You can use Ethernet to split, but you can't use it to join. So you choose your network depending on your need. Then latency. What's your maximum latency limit? Do you need to keep things below 1 millisecond? Or do you have a variety of choices? Does latency not matter? For a lot of CobraNet systems, latency like that just does not matter because you're not talking about live performance. And then how many channels do you need? Is 64 each way for a cable? Is that enough? Or do you need up to 500 channels? Or do you need more than 500 channels? So you can choose. The missing column is cost, really, isn't it? I suppose. Maybe that's what people want to know, cost. So we could sort of say, we could categorize them into, I suppose, two, maybe. So, thinking of a 32 channel module, is it above or below £1,000? Well, CobraNet, Ethersound, Dante, below, OptiCore, above, RockNet, Avion, React, Ravina, or below. So, let me ask, are there any questions about this? Right now, I just realised I haven't put ABB down there either. ABB is license free. It is sort of Ethernet compatible, but then you need dedicated ABB switches. Typical latency, less than 2 milliseconds. Channel count, over 500 in the gigabit.
so.
Okay. I've only got a couple of slides left, and then we really can sort of discuss all that. Or have more coffee and biscuits. So, when you need a network, maybe your first question is, should it be proprietary or should it be licensed? Let's compare. So, licensed products tend to be more widely available and it's easier to find an expert in them, let's say, to help with system design or troubleshooting. So, there are a lot more Ethernet experts around, and there are RockNet experts around, let's say. But with a proprietary system, you know where to find guys. You know, you can look up Real, you can look up OptiCore on the internet, and you find a phone number, and you can call them and get the support. If you're looking for Ethersound support, you sort of, maybe you don't know where to look to find the experts. Actually, there is a website, but you probably don't know where to find it. So you have to do some deeper searching. Then, proprietary products do tend to make a more cohesive system, but then they're designed with specific applications in mind, which your application might not quite fit with. But it might do. Might be absolutely perfect for some systems, but it's clearly not suitable for others. So, you wouldn't use OptiCore in a network where you only need 20 audio channels going to 50 different locations, for example. Then, licensed network technology has more information available to the users, designers, and troubleshooters. There's documents galore about sort of Cobernet and Ethersound and Dante, sort of how to design a system. How to look for troubleshooting and so on. But with systems like MediaNet or OptiCore, then there's only one place you can go. You know where to go, there's only one place you can go for that. So if something goes wrong with an OptiCore system, you know who to blame, and that can be a good thing. So you know where to get your support from, you know where to get your questions answered. So, of course, we are all interested in audio quality. Do any sound better than the other? I would say if I was here with any of the network protocols and we did a blind A-B test, none of you would be able to tell the difference. All right. I strongly believe that. Because I've done those tests myself in my own kind of laboratory. I don't have perfect ears at all, but you know, if a sound engineer can't hear the difference in his studio, who cares who's sitting in the audience? You know, the audience have no way of telling. They won't know the difference between an MP3 and a CD half the time. Oh, I must depend on the audience, so I shouldn't say that about. Guys would know. People in a nightclub wouldn't know. Especially if you're on a cruise ship and the engine's running. Right. I've chosen this because I thought you would be interested in comparing Dante with Ravena, because they are two sort of competing protocols. Did you know Ravena is the place that Dante died in the story? So those Ravena dudes have sort of, you know, touched a sensitive area of the Dante dudes. It's like they're looking for a fight, you know? It really doesn't look like that. So, similar network concepts, what's the difference? As far as I can tell, because I don't know a lot about Ravena, and obviously I've never played with it because there aren't enough products to get my hands on yet. But Dante has a license. You pay to use it as a manufacturer. Ravena does not have a license. So, will Ravena products be lower cost, therefore? Many people would hope so, but I would think probably not. Because you have to take into account the development cost and the time of development. You know, Dante has ready-to-use modules and an already existing support network of people who can help with design and manufacture and so on. So I'm not sure how where that stands with Ravena. Not sure at all. I can't give any opinion about that. But it's something to think about, not just the licensing costs, but the cost of development, which really needs to be studied. So another one, Dante versus ABB. So if there are manufacturers here, maybe you're thinking, do I just use ABB, plan to do ABB and forget about Dante, or do I go for Dante now and then spend a bit more development time and cost later to convert from Dante to ABB? You know, it is a bit of a gamble. Of course it is, because we don't know how popular ABB is going to become yet. So if you skip Dante altogether and ABB becomes nothing, then you sort of lost a couple of years of product sales. So anyway, Dante products can be firmware upgraded to be compatible with ABB. So Dante is a solution you can use now and in the future, but then you do have that extra development needed for the firmware upgrading. Dante has another advantage. Remember, it can integrate with existing networks and existing switch, or Ethernet switch infrastructure, existing office networks. So if you have an existing infrastructure, an existing building that needs an audio network, then choose Dante. If you're going to build a completely new system, then you can choose ABB. So, I'm not telling you what to do because I don't know. I'm just giving you the information as I understand it. So, here's kind of my conclusion, which I know could be different to your conclusion. And we can talk and ask questions about that. So, there is no one solution fits all at the moment. Each system we have seen has a different advantage and different disadvantage, and each protocol that we've seen suits different types of applications. There's no one system that fits all applications. Because you have to obviously take into account cost and price. So you could say, oh, BlockNet with MediaNet, that could do everything. But remember the price of a MediaNet node. And then you realize it's not practical. So different protocols, yeah, fit different sizes, styles, and prices of the network. Dante is becoming the dominant choice for IT-based networks. And it will continue to increase because month on month there are new people making Dante products all the time. And ABB has been slower in development than we anticipated. It's getting closer, but still it's been taking longer than we thought. So and if you're in the broadcasting world, keep your eye on Ravena, see what it's up to. But I don't know of any benefits that it has over Dante. Unless the free licensing thing is really important. But you know, in the broadcast world, you're kind of mostly talking about smaller quantities of manufacture anyway, so I guess license fee would be so much of an issue anyway. But to be honest, I'm not sure. Sorry about that. I'm not an expert in everything. Then, optical. That has its place for audio-only networks. It does an excellent job for what it does. You know, it's specialist in one key area. Go to the Olympic Stadium and you'll see what kind of a job it's doing. And then MediaNet is also becoming dominant for large-scale networks where audio is maybe a small part of it. You know, or let's say the sound reinforcement part of audio is a small part because then there's comms. Comms in large sporting events, you have hundreds of communications channels. You have a lot more communication channels for audio than you will have sort of audio channels go to your mixing desk. So stuff like this, MediaNet and Optical, which carries network data inside it, are doing a good job right now, and they are not going to be replaced by AVB. So the small proprietary networks that we mentioned will remain a niche choice. We'll see what happens to them, probably bit by bit. They'll be phased out as Dante or AVB sort of starts to take over, let's say. Is that the end? Yes, it is. Yeah. One thing networking doesn't do is cure all your cable problems. For that. There's your analog cable mess, and then your, there's your Cat5 cable mess. There we go. But that will depend on your own installed system. Right, I've worn myself out. You must all be tired as well. Please ask any question you'd like.
For about 10 minutes.
What I've said.
Well, the first thing I'd say is that any protocol, I mean, this is just my view, so any protocol that's got a future has got to be layer 3 compliant with the network infrastructure, because let's be honest, we're a very small industry compared to the telecoms industry, and the amount of development and research that's going into making gigabit networks, 10-100 gigabit networks, fibre, faster and faster and faster, we ought to be piggybacking off that existing investment. And so, for small things, great, have your own. Also, you forgot one that's made in Scarborough called Brickworm, which is a totally British little Cat5 based thing, and it costs under £1,000. Anyway, I've got one. But it works and it's cheap. But I just, okay, that was the first thing to say, but the other, why are you dissing Ravenna so much? Is it just because you haven't fiddled with it yet?
I don't, to be frank and honest, I don't see the point of it when
it's open
source. Like Dante is already out there and is reasonably low cost anyway.
Yeah, but I mean, as we all know, standards are wonderful. That's why we have so many of them. But to me, the logic of an open source standard as opposed to a closed source standard is that it's open source, that anyone can develop.
As a manufacturer, I'd say that's also a risk, because if you're licensing from Dante, for example, you get sort of a little magic biscuit PCB, and it's a closed unit. If you've got open source and lots of manufacturers making open source stuff and they don't play together, then you've got a problem that no one's going to take responsibility for diagnosing.
Mm.
If you're using somebody's license call, then it's their problem.
I can see what you're saying, but there again, if you're using something like Ravenna, and it's got to live on the Ethernet protocol, it's got to be layer 3 compliant, it's got to be rootable, like Dante.
But someone's going to want to scale that, aren't they? There's a limit. Own stuff.
Yeah, but it'll scale with the network.
It may.
But sure. Who's going to be expert enough to troubleshoot a system with multiple manufacturers?
Something
you have to
consider. Isn't it the point that, I mean, I'm not in this game at the moment, but if you've got a commercial license system, if that company or organization fails commercially, you're really sick.
That's true.
It's open source, it exists in its own entity.
Yeah, so I know you've done lots of focus right, Dante, but I know other people who've built boxes with Dante in them and beaten their head quietly on the floor until blood came out trying to make it work.
There's been a bit of that. Dante feels they've been quite helpful. They've taken their time getting a rugged product that's pretty much there. There's a few things they won't play with still.
The Ravenna stuff's out there too. I mean, those people, the guy who does the RME design, the RME boxes, I can't remember who does their Maddy design, he's got his own thing, I can't remember the brand, but he's got Maddy to Ravenna converters already out there. And then Danish audio. I mean, I wanted to hear you tell me which one to use. Basically, and what happens if you've got a network and then two protocols on it, and they're both using DiffServe to control their quality of service, and they both start fighting the switch.
Yeah,
that's really brilliant. Sorry, yeah. I'm just horrible.
You should say that could happen, yeah. Well, obviously, I'm coming from the view, from the user side,
yeah,
rather than from the. I work for a manufacturer.
Mm.
I have nothing to do with the manufacturing.
Mm.
I have everything to do with the support and so.
I'm purely a user too.
Yeah.
We
have some
so,
other questions, haven't we?
Yeah. Sorry.
It's slightly related, I guess. There's this idea that the MVP is going to help implement inside, and there's this idea of using open source control for the contract side of things. What's your opinion on open source control inside MVP?
Yeah, good. If well, good and potential problems. There's, you know, there's pros and cons of everything. Pros: you only need one cable, which has your audio and your control, so it's more simple to build and design your network. But if you've got one cable with two types of data in it, then it could be more difficult to troubleshoot. You know, if your audio is reaching its destination but your control data is not, then you could have a little bit of head scratching, which probably might be easier solved if they were, they were separate. So pros and cons, but yeah, the great thing will be if one manufacturer's mixing desk will be able to control another manufacturer's stage box or effects processor or something. That's a key sort of thing to work towards for the future.
Yeah, I'm back. Given the spec of the OptoCore system, it's just essentially blows everything else out of the water.
Yeah.
Would it not make more sense for manufacturers to gravitate towards something like that, in that cost may reduce in terms of market share increases, i.e. number of boxes made, price reduces.
Yeah. Yeah. So
really,
yeah.
Latency 0.041 milliseconds.
Yeah.
Nothing else comes close to that.
Yeah. So
channel count, nothing else comes close to that.
Yeah.
So if they're all developing at similar rates, by the time, I don't know, Dante's getting reasonably big, but by the time CobraNet, for example, if that decided to carry more channels, by the time they develop more OptoCore, it'll be up to 10,000 or...
Mm. But you know, one limitation it has a wonderfully low latency, but they only achieve that by limiting the size of their network. So you can only have up to 24 devices, OptoCore devices, in one ring, and that's how they can keep the latency low. Sometimes you're going to need hundreds of devices in the network. 24 plainly isn't enough, so it won't be the answer for everything.
Okay.
So you have a good point. So
with 48 devices, would that latency not just double if they were to pursue down that route? In which case, it still blows
across. Yeah, you might be able to think along those lines. Not too sure, you know, exactly of the mechanisms of optical if they would be able to do that. But of course, you could have kind of two rings with a connecting point in between it to build a bigger system, but the cost is quite a lot higher. So if you want lots of little nodes with only two channels in and out, and you know, the lowest cost fiber optical device is a couple of thousand, then that's clearly not so practical. You know, you're not going to have optical coming in and out of every loudspeaker, like you possibly could do with AVB or Ravino or Denton. And, you know, Ravino, AVB, Denton, because they use a lot of standard IT devices to build a network, they're always going to be really, really low cost. Whereas optical, I mean, if everybody started buying optical products, they become a really rich company, and they'll either make millions of pounds or they'll drop their price. So yeah, if they license their technology, then that would be interesting. You know, if they decided to do that, that would be very interesting, I'm sure.
Sorry.
Let's send them all an email.
I thought the whole point of AVB was that it was supposed to be fully layer 3 Ethernet compatible, and it worries me that you can't just use a normal switch. But you have to. What's the problem?
Well, if you just use an old switch, you lose your precision time protocol, you lose your specific related to AVB quality of service and bandwidth reservation and so on.
So it's not using the standard quality of service of.
No,
it's already in place in the comms world. It's using its own proprietary.
A new range of.
That worries me. Because, I mean.
Yeah. Yeah, a little bit. Yeah. Makes it less flexible.
Yeah.
Is this layer 3 compliant in the sense that inside it has an Ethernet tunnel?
Kind of.
It's not compatible with standard switches, but inside it has networking.
Basically, yeah. Or you can bridge between subnets or something with it, put it through routers somehow. Using standard Ethernet tools, you can use the network like you would use a computer network, just you've got high bandwidth of data.
So you talk about latency a lot. In fact, one of the earlier formats, you were talking about how the latency changed throughout the network, and the example you gave was your left PA stack can be one sample out to your right PA stack.
Yeah.
Last time I looked, speed of sound meant it only travelled like 7 millimetres in one sample. How much of an issue is that? Especially kind of if you have like multiple zones around the ship. Surely it doesn't matter if the front half of a ship is actually second out to the back half.
Yeah, if a listener only hears a sound coming from one speaker, that doesn't matter at all. But if you're a listener and you're hearing two speakers and there's a different latency, there will be some cone filtering, but you are right that it will be hard to hear, because with a one sample delay, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think the cone filtering, the first sort of cancellation point will be at something like 22 kilohertz. So it'll be a little bit of a curve. So it won't affect frequencies below 10 kilohertz, let's say. So
it's not a problem acoustically, but it's as soon as you try and start to submix those channels.
Then
you'll have your cone filter problem.
Yeah.
So it's always that someone will directly combine the one that's one sample delay.
So I think that problem is you need to eat the sound and not to the other networks.
Do you think there are too many different options available? Obviously, as a manufacturer, you guys have to create cards and stuff like that, and at some point, you're going to have to go, oh, we're not going to do that, because it's just,
we've got
20 cards now, and we can't afford development costs.
It's a huge task to cope with them all. So, a manufacturer has to be very careful to choose
what
ones
would you drop.
Pardon?
What ones would you drop from the list there, get rid of a couple, just because you can.
Well,
in your opinion, which ones?
I worked for Yamaha, so obviously I'd drop the React one. that's being cheeky. It does a good job of what it does.
I mean, they all do good jobs of.
So they've all got their own sort of in place, things that they sort of do, there's not that much difference to kind of warrant having 8, 9, 10 different standards. They're all trying to accomplish a similar thing.
Yeah. Well, I'm with networking, I'm an agnostic. So it's sort of like I don't care. Or I see the good points of them all, I see the bad points of them all, and I don't choose any as my favourite, you could say. But yeah, I do prefer some over others, I guess. Okay, No, I'm not going to say. It's being recorded. My boss listens to this. No, he wouldn't. I want you to decide on the information I've given you. I don't want to prejudice anyone or influence anyone in any particular direction too much.
I hope maybe they might.
Yeah.
In answer to that last question, surely it's where your product fits in the market.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the simple answer.
Sure, yeah. Do you go for the high end like OptiCore
or MediaNet,
or do you go for the low end, low cost like Avion, React? Or do you go for the middle ground like Ethersound?
And maybe
Ravina?
Or do you try and cover as many bases as possible?
Actually, probably like Ravina is probably trying to cover as many bases as possible, low cost, small channels, and higher cost, high channel counts. So, do have some mixing console manufacturers signing up for using Ravina, and mixing consoles are generally the place where you need lots of inputs and outputs. So, yeah, the sort of trying to cover as many bases as possible would be the Ravina and Dante side of things. So, yeah, there's a lot of things to consider. And that's why there are so many standards, because there's so many solutions that are needed. You know, there's no one common thing about every audio system that exists. They all have different requirements and different needs and different price points. So, sorry guys, we're going to have to live with a whole bunch of standards for a while, longer yet. Sorry,
you mentioned converters being, are they being developed? I wasn't quite sure whether they were available.
Yeah,
now.
Converting from one network to another. Yes, where was that? Was that here? Yeah, these kind of things. Okay, this one from Overtran. Historically, Overtran have been making a lot of Ethersound products. Now they've signed up for Dante as well. This one is almost on the market. Okay, so it's announced and launched, but it's not shipping yet. Clark Technic One is out there and is available already, and will do AS50, Mali, Dante, Ethersound. The Whirlwind One is out there and is available to use as well. Whirlwind historically are a USA company that started making sort of multi-core cable systems, and then they got into networking as a result of that. So networking for live sound. And then Yamaha make this box. Now this is a digital mixing engine. It's a bunch of DSP that you program with software, but it takes these cards. So you can put four of these cards in, and then you can convert any card to another card. So all those systems, the last three are available now and have been for a little while. The Aerotrain one is coming, should be later this year, as far as I know. And there'll probably be some more choices coming in the near future as well. So embrace the fact that sound systems could easily have more than one network in them. Yeah, I presented this so you can understand the benefits of each one. And if you choose one, you make a system with one, well, you can still get one of these boxes and then expand the system with another type. So you're not locked into one type all the time, forever. I think we've run out of time. I'll hang around for another coffee, maybe, with me, so you can discuss anything with me outside of the room. Thanks very much for having me.